American Workers Radio.com.
You're listening to American Workers Radio, a national network promoting American-made products with your host, Michael Blihash.
Well, welcome once again to another edition of American Workers Radio here on 860 AM. As you know, no matter where you live in the Philadelphia and tri-state area, you can turn on the radio to 860 and hear our great broadcast featuring very well-known Larkin Connolly, the East Regional Vice President of the SCORE Association, Rich Logis, the Principal of RJL Technology Integration, and Mark Andel, the founder of the Made in America store. If you received our email this morning, send it to another person because we love having so many of our people send out the email to get the family of listeners growing. I'm glad that you stopped me in my travels to let me know that you tune in and, of course, offer me your opinions. You can always send me a note to michael@americanworkersradio.com, and I'll be very, very happy to respond to you. Well, as all of us have been seeing, many, many changes have been taking place in the USA. I'm sure if our engineer, Henry Chaplinsky, was to say, are they good changes, Henry, or are they so-so? What would you like to say?
What kind of changes are you talking about?
Well, I mean, I'm talking job changes, fiscal responsibility in the government. What do you think?
The government? A lot of foreclosures in my neighborhood.
Yep, this is what's happening. This is what I mean. Well, all of you listening and all of you on the panel, because the American people really want a major change to happen in America, people like Henry Chaplinsky, all of my kids and their family members and friends, I want all of you to know that all of your voices are being heard, and we're now on changing the 30-year trend of horror that took place in this country. Whether it's on radio programs, television broadcasts, and newspaper articles, or on internet programs, I see people going up there on Yahoo and all these others, being discussed at local communities. Ideas are starting to be shared about how important it is for America to change the landscape of employment here in our country. Just early this morning, I was discussing with someone about the clothing industry. In Northeast Philadelphia, we had a number of clothing industries, and they were saying, where did the clothing industries go and why did they go? And I said, well, that's a good question. I'm going to bring that up to our panel today. Everywhere I go, every event I attend, everybody says we are fed up not having enough jobs for ourselves, but now it's affecting people personally, where they're seeing their children or their grandchildren not have the jobs that they need. So, gentlemen, today I'd like to talk a little bit about this. And, Mark, you're a perfect person to discuss it because you're right on the front lines, opening up your new store in a couple weeks on Saturday, May the 21st. You see that now that wallets are empty and bills have to be paid, more Americans are behind people like all of us and movements like ours, so that we can get people together, offer suggestions, and make something happen in this country before it gets worse. Mark, I'm going to open up with you today. What did you think of that little opening?
Yeah, you know, Mike, how you doing? And Larkin and Rich and Henry and listeners, like to welcome you. You know, you're hitting what we're all about again. I don't know if you've seen, Mike, you know, on that Gardex product that we, the last rake, the spring rake company that I sent you yesterday, where this company's going out of business again. too much regulation here, you know, fixed mandated wages, and everything affected it. It's, you know, like the owner I talked to, I tried to get him on the radio, but he just didn't want to come at this point because he's going through a lot of things. And like you talk about the textile and clothing industry, Bob Chesbro, you know, from Wigwam, I always think about because he said, you know, our government gave away a lot of these industries and textile industries with trades to other countries because he didn't really, you know, they didn't feel it would really affect anyone. Well, it does affect the people working at the clothing factories and the textile factories. So, Mike, you know, you've got something here that, you know, is being talked about in the presidential election, something we got to do to stop businesses and jobs from going overseas and getting back. We got to make it easier to do business here and have that, you know, entrepreneur spirit and the free market because it's just getting harder and harder to do business here, period.
You know, Mark, you're absolutely right. And one of the biggest conversations I've been having in the last year with parents and also with students is that while they're in school, there's virtually nothing discussed about how to open a business, what to do, you know, how, you know, you make your products available to the people, advertising, all that sort of stuff. It's just not there. It's some communication barriers that are put up in the schools. And they're just not putting that on the table for the kids to understand. I mean, we all knew much better because we had a barter with people. It was always something going on. But today, there's just not that entrepreneurial spirit. It's not there.
Yep,
what do you say, Rich?
Good morning, guys. Good morning, everyone. Mark, I think you were going to say something. Can I defer to you?
Yeah, I just wanted to say one thing. Last night, I had a chance. A friend brought his son, Troy Fallon, in that started his own home remodeling business and plus, and 23 years old. Larkin, I gave him your cell number, and I hope that was all right, but 23 years old, entrepreneurial spirit, a lot of energy, a lot of questions, and I mentioned SCORE to him and what you're all about, and you know, he's doing well, but being younger, you know, again, hard to get capital. Hard for him to have people that he's going to bid these jobs since he's a young guy. He doesn't have the reputation around, so he was going to ask you some questions. But, you know, there is hope out there. Once in a while, I see this young guy, and boy, does this young guy have that entrepreneurial spirit that we're missing. You know, I'm afraid it's a dying breed, but it was great to see, Mike. So there is hope for some of these young guys, and he just happened to get into this. He just happened to, you know, become this entrepreneurial, spirited guy, and you know, every day he's fighting the fight. I told him two things: stay hungry and never quit.
You're absolutely, oh man, you are so right. And how do we get that back into the conversation of our young people? Larkin?
Good morning, Michael, and Mark, and Rich, Henry. Let me supplement your comments by telling you about something that happened to me last night. Just last night, I was in Hartford, Connecticut, Monday and Tuesday, visiting with some entrepreneurs and stories that I could take the whole hour to tell about people who's. I met a guy who started the preeminent medical practice as it relates to autism worldwide, and Gateberry. Connecticut. What an interesting guy, and he's brought his son into the business, and it's just amazing. But I was flying back last night. It was late. I flew out of Reagan in Washington. I was flying home, and there was a guy sitting next to me, and I had my U-shaped pillow behind my head, my earplugs in, and he didn't care that I had earplugs in. He just said, "What do you do?" And I think he asked me three times before I finally heard him. Took my headset off, and I said, and I explained SCORE to him, and he said, "Oh, that is cool. That's really, really great. I didn't even know organization like that existed." And we went on and on, and I finally returned the favor and said, "Well, what do you do?" And he said, "I'm the superintendent of schools for a county in Georgia, just north of Jacksonville. I've got 28,000 students. I can't remember all the numbers." But I said, obviously you were up north lobbying in D.C. And he said, "I was, for the school student lunch program." And he said, "When I see what the government spends all of its money on, I find it necessary to do some lobbying to get them to divert that money so that I can feed students that wouldn't otherwise even have a meal. And he and I got into this rather extended conversation with the superintendent of schools about, you know, where does that responsibility lie? I don't want to see kids come to school and go home hungry to empty houses, no food, no spirit, whatever. And he agreed but said, you know, it is what it is right now. We talked about the fact that we're 36th in science and 42nd in math. And I tried to get him to tell me what's wrong. What's the fix? If I could give you a wand and allow you to whack somebody on the head with it and have everything change, what are the top three things that you would change? And he said, that's easy. Top three, I can list them, 1, 2, 3, wham, wham, wham. And I said, okay, what's that? And he said, parental participation. Well, I guess what you're telling me is that parents don't much care anymore. And he said, you have no idea the number of students in this country that go home to empty houses, that go home to houses where the father isn't working. There's no pride in the house. Only mama's there, or mama's gone, daddy's gone, and it's grandma. And he said, the American family has collapsed. It's gone. It really has. I mean, we still obviously have good families in many places across the country. But the problem with education right now is the fact that parents aren't involved, and they think that the board of education and the teachers and principals are all the solutions to this, and it isn't. The solution is parents who care.
You are Larkin, that's absolutely so true.
So, and we culminated the conversation by saying, you know, all of this that we've talked about, the thing that irritates me the most is that we got so far away from skilled labor. We got so far away from, and he said, you know, that is hysterical that you mentioned that, because we are bringing this school year to a close. I opened a second high school. It's all about trades. If the student wanted to go to this trade school, and we have plumbing, auto repair, carpentry, and he named like six disciplines. He said, if you wanted to go, we allowed you to go for whatever it was that you wanted to go for. We gave you a counselor at that school, and they got you into a program. He said they spend one-third of their time at the major high school, and then they're transported 2 miles away to the new high school where they immediately go into shop class, plumbing class. They learn how to sweat pipes and the whole 10 yards. And I said, how's it going? And he said, you have no idea how successful this program is. It's unreal. And I said, did the class fill up? And he said, well, I will say this. There were an awful lot of students that recognized on their own that this is where they needed to be. This is what they needed to do. They're not academicians. They really are people who prefer and enjoy to work with their hands, and we want to give them an honorable trade. But he said, we also... like the English system that you explained to me 10 minutes ago when I explained it, what Bruce had explained to us on the phone one time, he said, about the freshman or sophomore year, we really, our counselors over at the regular school, at the academic school, go through a process where they examine each student. And are they learning? What are they learning? Are they coming along? Are they truant? Are they attentive? Do they care? And he said, we will go through each one of those classes and select a handful of kids and convince them that that's where they needed to be. And he said, they're some of our best students. But he said, the pride with which those guys walk out of that thing with pieces of furniture. And well, I said, you know what? I still celebrate the pride I had when I built my first birdhouse. And he laughed. And I said, you know, the poster's on the inside, not the outside. I screwed up a handful of things, but I made it with my own two hands. And he said, it's amazing the reception that we're getting in this high school that's ultimately a trade school and teaching kids how to work with their hands in a very, very honorable vocation.
You know, Larkin, that is wonderful to hear that. And I'm sure everyone listened very attentively. I would only like to add one thing. If we could get people like that together in one convention center and let them hear the benefits of going into the trade schools. So many of the school districts have virtually no trades being discussed or even on the table right now. That's why I was promoting for the last few years to get after your school boards. Some of them say it's impossible because of the cost to reinstate the programs, which they canceled 25 years ago, and they're sorry they canceled. But now there are not enough skilled teachers in the system, many of them retired. You would have to bring in people from a business to be teachers and things like that. I said, well, what is the problem? Anybody who says that to me, what is the problem? If you get your child a skill, at least they'll be able to produce something. And there's a dozen and one places that will be coming available. I see it more and more that's going to want to do that. But you're not going to have people that are going to be able to do 1,000 sales jobs, computer jobs. Everything is changing. Everyone is a computer expert today. The thing is, if we make things, and how can you go to a store and look at 95% of the clothing? Textile industry is one of the biggest nightmares that we have seen in this country. Leave America, the textile industry. Every piece of clothing that a person has on right now is probably from a foreign country. That's very unfortunate. That's not good for our example. It's not good for our economy. And in fact, I don't know if any of you have been seeing this, but they're promoting the TTP as a very positive new trade agreement that people should call their congressmen and senators. Have any of you seen those ads?
Yeah, it is a lobbyist ad that is coming on. And you know, Michael, I've been studying that and looking at it, and I'm afraid that I'm starting to not disagree with TTP. I think some of them go way too far, and we allowed them as a part of the agreement to take advantage of us, like NAFTA. But we have to become members of the world trade. We can't withdraw in and to ourselves without saying that, yes, we do want to participate in the world economy, but at the same time, you know, we want our fair share of manufacturing to be done in this country.
Right. We need a leader with authority, many leaders with authority. That should be their common interest. How do we take care of our people in the country so that they can earn and pay the taxes, not just tax them and they don't care where you get the money from? As I said, empty wallets and bills to be paid are starting to personally affect a lot of people. The fact of the matter is this: the TTP may be a better plan because it is getting all of the international countries and companies together. But I think that every one of those trade agreements has to be put back on the table and renegotiated so that America doesn't come out on the bad end of the stick. This may be an opportunity for us to restore our clothing and textile industries to just 50% of what they were. Just 50% of what they were would bring about 14 million jobs in a reasonable amount of time. Now, would anybody argue with that? Would anybody argue going to the store and finding a dress shirt or a casual shirt and a selection of an American-made product or a product made foreign? You can make your decision. Right now, you don't have a decision. Everything that you pick up is it. So the TTP ads have interested me, too. I haven't been able to get to the bottom of exactly why they're promoting it. I'm hoping Larkin, Rich, Mark, and everybody listening that the TTP will not help us for the first year and screw us for the next 100 years.
If the politicians don't put the stopgap measures in to protect their own electorate, and that's the problem. I wanted to do something else because I did this with this superintendent last night, and he got it wrong, and it really was. We kind of, he looked at me and said, "You have got to be kidding." I had no idea. I wrote down two numbers. 19 trillion 500 billion dollars, and I wrote down 16 trillion 720 billion dollars, with all the six zeros to follow. And I said, now here's my pen, here's the piece of paper. I want you to mark next to them those numbers, 19 trillion and 16 trillion. I want you to mark next to those numbers which one is our national debt and which one is the gross national product of this country. And he said, well, obviously, the gross national product has to be higher than our debt. Wrong.
Yep.
Our national debt now in the trillions exceeds our total gross national product.
That's exactly right, Larkin. Now, here is an educator that you're speaking to. As I said, I'd like to get them in the biggest convention hall that we have in America, in a stadium, where they can have 2 days to discuss these issues. The fact that you said earlier that he never heard of a place like SCORE, that's one thing. But if they got together and they discussed these common issues, there would be no excuse for them not to know about SCORE. There would be no excuse for them to say, well, let's have a competition between school districts to see which students are better prepared to go into business, to open up a lumber yard or whatever. Let's see who is in competition with each other. We're just not doing that as an American people. We've learned to sit back and do and say nothing and wait and hope that someone will come along to lead us. This current election process, all this campaigning, is starting to bring people that never spoke about elections to speak up because, as I said earlier, empty wallets and bills to be paid certainly make an impact on people. And it's happening to people personally now. And they keep announcing on the radio and the television how many young people have to move back in with parents and with grandparents, that it's impossible for them to, you know, move forward in their life because no one looked out for the job possibilities in our great country. We are the greatest country on earth. Freedom, you name it. But we have to have the freedom to also speak up in behalf of our young people. Rich, what would you like to add to that?
Wow, guys. Well, you know, again, good morning to everyone. And, you know, Larkin, as you're talking, what you're saying about your talk with the superintendent is starting to is now resonating with me more than ever, because I can happily announce on air that me and my wife are expecting our first child in August.
Congratulations!
And thank you, Michael. And it's a baby girl.
About time.
And I mean, Larkin was, you know, for the last, I mean, I've known Larkin now for 3 years. I mean, Larkin, I think you text me every day. Rich, when are you guys having kids? I mean, I think it's been every day, Larkin. I mean, I look at my messages, and I'm happy to announce, Michael, and some of the people who are with our show have congratulated me, and I want to thank everyone and make that announcement. And, you know, Larkin, as you say this, I think about the fact that there's a presidential candidate who wrote a book called It Takes a Village. And in that book, talks about how basically every institution in our society, and society as a whole, is responsible for raising our kids. And I think about this, and I think, it doesn't take a village. It takes two parents who aren't dipsticks to raise children. I mean, I'm sure, Michael, that, like, Joseph Stalin told everybody in Russia and Poland that it takes a village, too. Just like I bet in Sharia law nations right now, those governments, including one, which is a monarchy, a Sharia law monarchy, I mean, how archaic can you really get, who tell people that the society will take care of you, except that one does it as religion, and then the other has no religion in it. But in reality, they're rooted in the same thing. So it doesn't take a village, Michael, Lark and Mark. It doesn't, Henry, all of our listeners. It takes two parents who aren't dipsticks. And the reality is, me and my wife are sitting down, and, you know, we're, you know, that's what happens when you, like, now I'm starting to realize all the parents who tell me, oh, when you have kids, you're going to think, and we're writing stuff down, and my wife is like, we got to do this, and we got to do that. And I'm writing, I said to my wife, I said, oh, first of all, the number one thing on that list that we got to make sure is the kid don't become a progressive. I mean, that's number one on the list. I don't college fund? No. That comes later. We got to make sure of this. So, Michael, the youth that you talk about moving back home, you know, I wonder if they support free stuff and $15 an hour minimum wage, because our youth their intelligence and innovation levels are off the charts, but they've been indoctrinated to believe this stuff, this it takes a village crap, and that's because they've been failed. And so, Larkin, you know, you look at school board. I mean, Michael, I don't care if you're talking president, governor, Senate, any member of Congress or your school board, the reality is that when people are involved, that's what's supposed to enact change. Embedded in the founding of this country was a principle, an idea, that we will fail or succeed based on the will of the people. And for many, many years, guys, and we know this, we can just look at our voter turnout. We can look at the apathy, Larkin, that you spoke to this superintendent on the most local of levels. When you have that apathy, that indifference, the lack of caring and concern, it leads to where we are today. Yes, Michael, we're still the best place. There isn't a doubt in my mind about that. What's actually amazing about this country is if you look at in the history of the world, there are thousands and thousands and thousands of years of civilizations. We've been around for 240 years, and we've gotten freedom and business and opportunity better than some nations that have been around for thousands of years. Thousands. Like Iraq, one of the oldest civilizations. How many people do you know are leaving everything behind in America and risking their lives to flee America to move to Iraq? Tell me.
That's exactly right.
How many do you know? So in 200, does it mean we're perfect? No, of course not. God, do we have issues? Find me a society that's done all things better. But right now, we are at that point that the founders warned about, where a struggle to preserve the republic would come. And they knew that this day would come. And they believed in a strong federal central government. Of course, there were differences. Washington and Thomas Jefferson, they had some differences of opinions on that. That's okay. We all have differences of opinion. But the central strong government was key. What they did not believe was you had to have it humongous and big and overreaching government to equal strong. So we are at that moment right now. We are at this moment where the salvaging of the country and of the things that have made us the best of anywhere in the world, regardless of how long those societies and nations have been around. That's where we're at now. And the day of reckoning is coming. And
hey,
it's
going
to come based on our electorate. You're watching, and we are watching, guys, excuse me, Mark, we are watching an electorate that right now, I believe, has awakened. It has. And I just hope, guys, I hope and pray that it isn't too late. Sorry, Mark.
No, my question to you, Rich, was have you watched the New York debates yesterday in the few days?
I did, you know, and of course, being a New Yorker originally, and you know, I'm kind of wondering, and just to be clear, guys, people can vote for who they want. I will never, ever, ever disparage someone for casting a vote for someone, regardless if that person can win. But the reality of it is right now, if Ted Cruz thinks that he's going to go to the convention, get the nomination, and win in November, I just, that doesn't make any sense to me. Ted Cruz is not a stupid guy. He has to know. I mean, I'm an idiot sitting in South Florida, and I know that. If Ted Cruz thinks he's going to the convention to get nominated on first, second, third ballots, whatever, and then win in November, no. This isn't happening. He has to know this. So the question is, you know, is it so much about taking Trump down at this point? Because it might be where we're at. It might really be at this point where if the FBI doesn't recommend indictment to Clinton, she's going to get nominated. And she's going to get, Larkin, I'm sorry to say this, but she's going to get cornered markets to come out for her no matter what. Do you guys realize that those markets, the 90-plus percent of those markets would vote for Clinton even if she's indicted and decides to keep her campaign going?
Well, you know, Rich, I want to just add something here. On both sides of the aisle, they are having a lot of trouble this year funding their national campaign. They had it already the last campaign 4 years ago. But there are a number of major sponsors, say Mac or whoever, who are just saying they're not going to support either convention this year. And so where they were expecting to have all the money scarfed away for the conventions on both sides of the aisle, they're maybe 50% to their goal at this time, and the convention's not that far away. And why this happened is because many of the people who were sponsoring the convention are people who are all supporters of foreign-made items. And that's going to turn into be a black eye as the convention comes up, as the protesters come up. And when someone called me about Ted Cruz, I asked them very nicely, very politely. I said, could you send to me his? He's talking about how we're going to restore jobs in America. Is there a written plan? I could tell you that elephants are going to fly from the ninth floor of our building. But until it happens, I can't believe it. Unless you document it with pictures and everything else, I'm not going to believe it. And what does he have? Well, we have a road to restoring jobs. What road is it? We need 45 million jobs in this country right now, full and part-time jobs. What is his plan?
You know, and Mike, well,
he said, you know what the guy said to me very nicely? Well, look on Ted Cruz's internet site. I'm sure it's there. And just like that superintendent, he told me, I'm sure it's there. He tried to call me to give me the full treatment, but he has no idea what's on Ted Cruz's site himself.
You know, Mike, in the last 2 weeks here, we've seen three American manufacturers having trouble going out. If you talk about Roaring Springs or Garnex, a bunch of, and these are great companies I've dealt with for, you know, 5-6 years, and it hurts our team. Everybody wonders how you could help them, and they're talking because of overregulation. They've got the product. They've got the sales. They just can't compete. It's sad for us to see, as a Made in America team, lose more manufacturers as we go. We wish we could grab them and actually take it over. I'm meeting a lady this Friday to take over one of her products. She's getting older. She doesn't want to fight the fight no more. We think we can build it in our general welding and then still continue to sell it at the store. It's been a high-selling product. I had a chance to bartend at my club last night at the Conservation Club, and you talk to people. I've got a head of Praxair. I've got a head of a large oil manufacturing company. I've got a construction guy. I got a trucking quarry guy, an owner. You know, this economy, people don't realize the tough shape it's in right now. Again, for us, oil and mining affected us tremendously. Our company, we deal with Derrick Manufacturing, laid off 500 people so far, and they do all the oil rig work. Desilters, desanders, they separate solids and liquids. They're in the 50-year low right now. They just laid off their 20-year employees, a bunch of them, first time in 50 years. And then we got Graham Manufacturing and Praxair. Moog is the top 100 companies. So I talked to them. They haven't had overtime. They haven't had any overtime in 4 months. Praxair is slow. I just laugh how many places are slow, but nobody's really talking about this, Mike. And this is a major, major problem. When I hear Trump saying about taxing, you know, imports and growing this country, if people leave, you're going to pay for it. You can grow this country that way.
Absolutely.
That's a fact.
And you know, something else which I just want to add in 30 seconds is America has been living in a false economy for a number of years. And part of the problem that Americans have experienced is the news media. The media has talked about how everything is wonderful with them and the people that they know. And if you're not a success, then you're a failure. not the system is failing you. Just as your people are going out of business because of overregulation, I know exactly what you're talking about because I spoke personally to the director of the Roaring Springs place, and he told me it is competition. We cannot produce the school books for this price when they're coming in from another country for a third of what it cost us to produce them.
And, Mike, they're second and third generation families. Their hearts in it. When you talk to these people, you realize they don't want to quit, but they have to. Too many rocks were put on top of them.
Right, and the false economy is also where the political people just continue to say, well, we need more money, and so we're just going to give you just a quarter penny, a half a penny, 1 penny more per item. Well, they don't understand that people's wallets are empty right now, and they have to pay bills, and they should have jobs. They should have multiple jobs. You drive down any highway, and it's a report card on what national and local leaders have done for years and years. How can you pass one building after the next for sale, for rent, you know, the whole deal, available, will build to suit? There's nothing to put in those buildings if we don't restore our textile industries and all of the other things that we're doing. We're talking about also computers. How can every young person buying a computer for the first time, maybe for school, how can they look at the computer and know that everything is made foreign? Where is our skills? Where's our innovation? Where is our workmanship? Larkin, tell me.
Well, you know, we don't have any workmanship because we don't train them. We didn't train them because there were no jobs available when they graduated from high school.
How did we get to the point of no jobs available? Most of the people that I meet at the campuses that retired 6, 8, 10, 12 years ago said that when they were 30, 40, and 50, they could have three full or part-time jobs. That's how many jobs there were. And they can tell you, I should bring them on this broadcast to tell the stories. These are now retired people that say, I just can't believe how it happened. It just didn't happen overnight. It's been a slow walking dog coming around and just never barked to wake you up.
Well, it's still happening. For all intents and purposes, we're farming our help desk issues to still to the Middle East and to the Far East, and laying off those workers at Disney and telling them if you want a severance, which is going to probably support your family for the next year while you look for non-existing jobs, that you have to train the workers that are replacing you. That is frightening.
And you know, Mark, you're right. And I think there should be a moratorium on all people coming here for at least 2 years for us to assess our whole situation and then make a decision. Do we really not have qualified people here in the USA? If we don't, then we have to bring them in. And if we then have the second question, why don't we have qualified people?
Because there are no jobs. There are no jobs.
It's a cycle. No jobs. 25 years ago, there were more than enough jobs, but those jobs slowly snuck out the door. That we were putting the lights out in all of our industries, and the American people still had part-time jobs enough to get by.
Mike,
but now that wallets are empty and bills have to be paid, things are changed and people are speaking up. Congratulations, everybody.
Yeah, you know, our companies went overseas 20 years ago because of the low-cost labor was number one. Then they built inferior products that everybody wanted in their homes. We wanted more junk and crap, right? So that's what happened when that's how the jobs left. We left because greed, we wanted more money. People wanted to buy more stuff, they didn't lead with quality like we talk about. Then Larkin, you're right. Eventually, as all the manufacturers went overseas, then you didn't need the jobs, but parents and guidance counselors did push their kids towards higher education and different jobs, become a doctor, not a plumber. So everything plays a part in this.
You know, Mark, you're right. Now, here I'm going to ask a question, and everybody else listening will have the same idea. If you saw for the last 6 months that there wasn't enough income for you to survive what you're doing, what would you do?
Well, before we answer that question, I want to insert this because I think we have a tendency to orient ourselves towards Donald Trump and start saying we're going to build a wall and Mexico's going to pay for it. Sure we are. The fact of the matter is that the United States Labor Department, and that could be lying to me for that matter, but the United States Labor Department will tell you that reshoring is happening at not a record rate, but it's in an accelerated rate, and that more jobs, manufacturing jobs, are being started in America now than they are in China.
I agree with that, and I agree with it because as I was preparing my Saturday commentary, I said there are more and more companies going to the marketplace with a little flag or a little emblem made in the USA. It is happening. It's just not at a rate big enough. We need a major hit in this country, Mark.
It's economics, Michael. I mean, it's purely economics. It's a vicious circle. The Americans will go to Walmart and pay one-third the amount they would pay for a Made in America T-shirt, my Buffalo shirt that I bought in Jackie's store at the Galleria. I showed it to my wife, and she said, "Wow, that's a T-shirt right there." I mean, you know, it's double stitched, and the collar is substantial. I said, "It's a Made in America shirt. I mean, it's a good, solid piece of merchandise. I will have this shirt 7 years from now. That Curie Beach T-shirt that I bought at a stand on the beach in North Carolina 2 years ago is already shot. The collar's already torn away. It's a piece of garbage. But guess what? Americans are so, let me make this statement so I don't, everybody doesn't end up hating me. Americans are stupid.
Well, you're right. They were stupid until their wallets are now empty and the bills have to be paid. And they're wondering, how did we get to this point? And then when they hear all these different political candidates, I'm not promoting Trump or anyone else, because the people will rule in the end. But until we get the message across that America needs to restore no less than 50% of everything that is sold in this country is made in this country, our economy will remain flat forever. Teraz i zawsze i na wieki wieku, forever and ever. Amen. If we want it to go up, we have got to restore our manufacturing. We got to get our young people back to understanding what skills are so that they can help themselves and know where they want to go.
What I'm saying is I can sit here and tell you right now that I want to get as much press and be on the television screen as much as Mark Andel is. Right now, immediately, I want it. Right now, we need to have it. Right now, right. I want it right now. But guess what? Until I stop looking like a fat, ugly 67-year-old white guy and start looking like a soon-to-be 50-year-old, bon vivant, intelligent, well-presented, handsome dude like Mark Andel, I'm not getting on television. So we can demand this all we want. We can demand it from our politicians. But until we as a movement come up with the answer.
The answer is, Larkin, I'm going to say this. The answer is I go into a lot of stores. I know the stores very well. At one time, you could walk the aisles and there was nothing obstructing your walking. Right now, they're so heavy with inventory from foreign countries that they're almost trying to trip you to make you know that it's there. But guess what? Someone like me is a difficult customer to have because I'll look, I'll pick it up, I'll put it in it back in its place, and they'll say, "Did you find everything that you wanted?" And I said, "No, I didn't find anything I wanted." And what were you looking for? I say, "I was looking for American-made clothing. What do you have?" And right away they pretend act on, "Oh, I don't know. I have no idea. We don't ever look. We never discuss it in the store." Well, that's a black eye right there, because the people who are on those merchandising sheets should really do something. Otherwise, they're going to have stores filled with merchandisers. People with empty wallets are not going to go and buy it because their credit is already to the max. They're not going to buy anything until we get to the point where 50% of everything is sold in America, is made in America. Our economy is going to remain where it is today. I'm sorry to say, we need some tough people in every state of the union, every city in the union, and also in the White House and in every office of the Congress and the Senate. People who are going to say, we live in America. What are we doing to preserve America?
You vote with your dollar, guys, right? Vote with your
dollar. No money. I will not spend a penny on this stuff. I aggravate. I get out of the car. Even my daughter, she's tired of, you know, oh, God, it's amazing. And people know me in the stores. And it's not that I don't want to buy or don't need. It's that I want to demonstrate that there is a constant flow of people, an individual that is not going to tolerate the way things are. If you want a customer, if you want a sale, then give me a little bit of what I'm looking for.
Michael, I just got to say one thing based on Larkin's comment. I need to significantly disagree with Larkin, because Larkin is being gratuitously modest and humble in his description. And let me tell everybody who's never met Larkin, Larkin is very suave and deboner. Okay, the bottom line.
You guys have to all start drinking. You're all getting lost in each other's eyes too much.
I'm not going to let you get away with
Larkin's
that, Larkin.
Looking sexy.
Okay. Larkin's very suave and deboner, okay? So I just want to be clear about
this. He's the kind of guy who could sell rosary beads to rabbis.
And you know, Michael, to talk about this issue that's come up, this is a very broad issue that's now, you know, the kinds of who are we looking for with elected officials? And you know, we think about what makes someone capable, what makes someone qualified. And my starting point, you know, if I could wave that magic wand, Larkin, I'm looking for people who aren't for sale. You know, that's who I want to start with. You know, I want to. I mean, I'd like to start. I mean, that's not a bad starting point.
You know, I said to the superintendent last night, surely it's not all parents. And he said, no. That's a myriad problems. I said, like in Philadelphia, we have union problems. And he went, oh, my God, if I had school teacher unions in the state of Georgia, I wouldn't know which way to turn. You got to be kidding me. And I said, no. You can't fire a teacher in Philadelphia. They've got teachers in Philadelphia that have committed white-collar felonies that still teach in those classrooms. You can't fire a teacher.
You know, Larkin and guys, 100 years ago, we asked immigrants from all over the world to come to America because there was a shortage of American workers to fill the jobs during our Industrial Revolution. Here we are 100 years later, and America's working age and able-bodied population, we need 46 million jobs. How is that possible? 100 years ago, we were the Industrial Revolution, and now the new global economy is the new Industrial Revolution. That's got to change.
Let me come back and come up with an answer. Excuse me, Mark. I come up with an answer for you. How did we get in this position? It's one of the downsides. It's one of the ugly parts of free enterprise. Sorry, let us down. It let us down. Profit became more important than people.
That's right.
And that's free enterprise, son. That's what they teach in school. That's buy it for 50 and sell it for a dollar. So all of everything that we're talking about is just a comment. This has got to change. I'm going to go in stores. I'm not eating until I find a hot dog that's made 100%. You know, all this stuff is just it's great chatter and great discussion. What Mark Handel does is an answer.
Right, exactly.
And that's
right.
That's what we have to come up with.
And there is not enough. There is not enough elected people, business people, going to Mark Andel's store and say, "Can I duplicate your model?" School students should have Mark Andel come in and tell his story personally.
They already do.
But they don't. We need it in that North Carolina and in Philadelphia and in all of our districts in New Jersey and Pennsylvania. There are not enough people discussing that because they say there are so many other urgent issues being addressed. And they are drug-related issues and things like that. Those are the issues that take up quite a bit of our time in our school system, which is sad to say, but it is a fact.
And I've talked too much today, and I apologize to Mark and Rich, but after we talked about the unions, you know what he said his next biggest problem? He said, we're going to talk about this, but whatever you do, you can't repeat this because I'll get fired by these very people. But he said, I have five elected school board members. And he said the shortest term one is now in his fourth term. Four-year terms. The shortest tenure in the Board of Education is 20 years. I said, you got to be kidding me. And he said, no, they get reelected. Well, why didn't they step aside for somebody else? And he said, I can give you $115,000 starting pay. I can give you 115,000 reasons why they don't want to not be elected.
Yep.
This is $115,000 they pay a school board member for a full-time job at running a school board when they should have nine parents from the school board running the damn district and telling the teachers and working with the superintendents and the administration to make it a better place to get their kids educated.
And you know, Larkin and everybody, Mark, and I believe that what's taking place in Congress, this should really be a volunteer effort down there. I think that they're there too much. They're coming up with too many ideas. This country operated fine with 50 or 80% less regulation than it is now. Those people are in Washington sitting around coming up with all sorts of ideas, but no idea to come up with ways we're going to support our people before we tax our people. And even this with Sanders and all talking about the minimum wage and all, the minimum wage is for those that want to go someplace and stay there. If you want to become something and you want your wage to go up, you yourself have to push yourself to reach that goal. Do you agree with that?
Oh, yeah, completely.
Well, this is what we're not teaching our young people. It's that I will fight my way to the door to get minimum wage. How long can that last? 5 years, 10 years, 50 years?
They're all entitled. Why? You know, why? I can get $190, $198 a week tax free, and just sit at home and watch, Price is Right, millions of prizes every half hour. Why wouldn't I do that? I mean, we've just completely lost sight. It's completely. And then we stand around and defend these people like they don't have rights.
And I want to make sure that I beg everyone listening today and to ask all of their family members and friends. I will send out a mass email myself to all of our Pennsylvania people. No matter how you're registered, make sure you go out. If you're a Democrat or a Republican, you can come out and vote if you're an independent in Pennsylvania. But do go out and vote. I'm not telling anybody who to vote for, but I think the majority has to rule. We're seeing elections taking place across the country with record numbers of people coming out. And that's wonderful.
I'll make two comments about the election. Again, I apologize for the diarrhea of the mouth that I have, but I'll make two comments about New York yesterday. You know, hooray Hillary Clinton. I stood up actually and gave her a standing ovation in the middle of the Ronald Reagan Airport. I stood up and just started applauding because she said, I've received more votes than anybody else running in either party in this country. Guess what? You tally up every vote that's been cast in the primary so far. You have less than 8% of the voting public. That's 8%. Good, Hillary. That's great. I can walk out my door in the morning and come up with 8%. What are you bragging about, 8%? That's absolutely absurd. Absolutely absurd. And I'll tell you something else. My prediction that Hillary Clinton wouldn't be the Democratic nominee would have come true, and the party would have come to a shocking end yesterday if this country, in its eminent fairness, would have allowed independent voters to vote for Bernie Sanders yesterday, he would have beat her. He would have beat her.
Yep.
He would have beat her. He got within 12 points without a single independent vote. He would have beat her.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I hate to tell you, Larkin, we did a good job. And on our final thoughts of the day, I'm going to have to ask Rich to take an extra minute to let us know what you thought of the last few elections.
What I, Michael, my thought is, my overall thought of it is, we're seeing overall, especially on the Republican side, which is being driven in large part by independents and people who haven't voted in many elections, and they're energized, and they're a little angry, and they're a little nervous about things, and they're coming out to show their support primarily for a person who's never held elected office. And this is what a charged up electorate looks like. Democracy is a great and wonderful thing, you know, but sometimes it's a little bit messy also. And there's no, Larkin, you mentioned capitalism and this, a free market and our free enterprise, and we're seeing the ugly sides of it come out. And I think what's coming out now, Michael, with our democracy is, we have democracy, but it's now at the forefront where our democracy hasn't worked the way it could and should.
I agree.
What is embedded in our principle, what's embedded in our founding, to make change based on the will of the people.
And you know, guys, I want to say this to you too, that because of your voices, everyone acting together as one unit, and everybody spending a little more on American made, businesses are getting the idea. It does pay to come back to America. It does pay to put on that little promo, made in the USA. We're certainly far off from a 50-50 balance, but it will happen. Maybe it's going to take longer than we want, but it will happen if we get everybody working together and spending together. Spending is where it all begins. You can have a million people going out to buy something, but if they're not buying it, if it's foreign made, then that's a million sales lost. Mark, closing remarks.
Yeah, guys, great show. We're busy up here in Buffalo. We got yanked out of another store. We're moving the Alma store. Our world-class destination's coming along beautiful. We got the weather, the pour de concrete. We're tying with that store-in-store concept, 100 stores on the East Coast. I'll be able to talk about that in about 3 weeks. Mike, you're going to love it, the message. The managers get it, and we are making a difference. I want to tell the listeners, go out, buy Made in America while you're confused and thinking about other things, because it absolutely works today when you do it.
That's right. Support all your small and medium-sized local community businesses, because that's where it's going to help. Yes, Larkin, your closing remarks.
I ditto exactly what Rich and Mark said, right? Spot on.
Because if we can do this, if we can influence our school boards and the parents to speak up at the school boards, to say we need the trades, we need the children not just to graduate with a piece of paper, but with something that could last them a lifetime. And I'm going to ask all of you if you would spread the word about AmericanWorkersRadio.com. You can listen to our rebroadcast. You'll be able to see Mark Andel's store. There is the Million American Jobs Project listed up there, which has almost 4 million people have looked at that site. And also, you'll be able to see the debt clock and see everything that we talk about is fact, not fiction. Make sure you go out and vote if you're in Pennsylvania, Delaware, and a few other places that will be voting this coming Tuesday. Go out and vote. Spread the word. Urge others to go and vote. You can't tell anybody how to vote, but if they're watching what's going on and they go out and vote, we at least have an opinion by more people. Until this Saturday at 11 or next Wednesday at 11, I wish all of you the very best. Have a great one.
Got a computer, so somebody sing us out. Hey, Larkin, sing.
Hey, I want to say hello to a new listener. He's 100% made in America, Tracy Hinman. Great listener. I checked him out. He's 100% made in America, guys.
God bless America.
There you go, man.
land that I love.
I can already
behind her and guide her through the light with the light from above. From the mountains to the prairies to the ocean white with foam. Everybody, God bless America, my home, sweet home. God bless America, my home, sweet home.
We're out.
I'm moving to Canada.
All right, who's paying the fine for the noise pollution?
I didn't hear any guitar, Henry.
No, I haven't.
Have a great week, guys.